It's the Confluence where the news comes together on 90.5 WESA. I'm Kevin Gavin. The number of COVID-19 cases in Allegheny County has increased slightly since the start of the school year, which officials expected, but daily cases have been mostly remaining under 100. County Executive Rich Fitzgerald joins us. Welcome back to the program, sir.
Good morning, Kevin. Good to be with you.
It's been 2 weeks since the Labor Day weekend. We don't seem to have experienced that post-holiday spike that we did after the 4th of July.
Yes, we've been, cautiously optimistic in seeing these numbers. And you mentioned it you're very accurately. You know, the coming back to school, coming back to the fall schedule with schools at both at the K through 12 level, the 80,000 or so collegiate and university students who come back to our great universities, fall activities such as sports and other activities that occur. We were fearful that the numbers would really go up, and we've seen that happen in other places around the country. But thankfully, here in Allegheny County, so far the numbers have not risen dramatically like they did back in June.
Mm-hmm. Health Department Director Dr. Deborah Bogan says about 20% of cases reported this month are connected to colleges and universities. Schools have put in mitigation efforts in place for students that live in the dorms, but they have little control over students who live off campus. Do you think it's the county's responsibility? Does it have a role to police, to monitor off-campus students who are potentially spreading COVID?
It becomes a challenge because, as you indicated, the universities have really done a great job of not only within their campuses, but really getting the word out to their off-campus population, which is significant in Allegheny County. The authority gets a little fuzzy, whether it's the university, the county, the municipalities, when it comes to occupancy permits at off-campus housing. So it's really everybody kind of working together. But what I think is really benefited this region is the culture of people who are willing to wear their masks, socially distance, do the mitigating strategies that we know work, that our health professionals have told us will work. And when you go through the campuses, and I do this on a regular basis, really to just see what's going on, you can see the vast majority of students and staff and people on these campuses are wearing their masks. And that's not something that you see in other parts of the country the way you do here in Allegheny County.
So you take a stroll on the campuses now and again?
I usually drive through, to be honest with you. Sometimes ride my bike through. But, you go through, going through some of the neighborhoods where there's a lot of college students, going through Oakland, going through Uptown, even over through Southside, where there's a lot of off-campus housing, going through Bloomfield and neighborhoods like that. You really see a culture of students and young people who are wearing their masks, even when they're not going into their classroom, even when they're not doing their official student activities, even in their kind of off hours and recreation. And that bodes well, because what we have learned throughout this pandemic is many activities can continue and operate if people are willing to cooperate, if they're willing to wear their masks.
Just 2% of COVID cases this month in Allegheny County are among K-12 students attending some form of in-person class. Many school districts are making plans to try to go back to in-person classes in October or November. Are you concerned the number of cases will jump once that happens? And what would you like to tell school board directors who are making these decisions?
Well, I think the school board, again, they're making responsible decisions. They're paying attention to the health professionals. They're paying attention to what their environment is within the physical spaces and the buildings and the student body that they have. So they're all, in my mind, for the most part, making very responsible decisions, and they're trying to, try to get some normalcy back. I mean, we want to have kids in the classroom. We want to have people having normal activities that they've done before. But if it's not done in a safe and responsible manner, with people wearing their mask, with people distancing and all the mitigating, washing their hands, the things that we have learned, then things can go very, very quick, go badly very quickly.
Are you concerned, though, that once schools really start reopening to in-person classes, there might be a jump?
There possibly could. And again, we have the same concern anytime there's a change in which, things open up. you always have to be vigilant. So there will be testing, there will be contact tracing. Yes, you're always concerned things could go wrong.
While the president and the head of the CDC disagree over a timetable for a vaccine later this fall or sometime next year, the county, through the health department, is planning for a rollout to distribute it whenever it is available. What sort of planning partnerships are required? Is this a whole new challenge?
Well, it will be. And the fact is the health department is planning for the next step, because we know the next step when we get to the 3-4 months from now, whatever it is. And Dr. Redfield, the CDC director, you know, indicated he thought next spring, early summer, you know, that we would be able to have a distribution or have vaccines available for distribution. We want to be prepared. So it really will be all of our organizations that are out there, whether they be businesses, whether they be our universities, whether they be our school districts, whether they be our faith-based communities, to be able to have a network of folks out there and a network of operations to reach people, particularly early on our most vulnerable populations, seniors, first responders, you know, people that have other underlying conditions. So that's also in the planning stages, and this process of where we go is going to continue to change. It's going to be continued to be a fluid situation. So what we would recommend to people is stay tuned.
Allegheny County Executive Rich Fitzgerald, thanks so much.
All right. Thanks, Kevin.
It's The Confluence on 90.5 WESA. I'm Kevin Gavin. The election is now just 6 weeks away, and we're going to get a preview of the key races in Pennsylvania at the federal and state levels with the editor of WESA's Government and Accountability Team, Chris Potter. Welcome, Chris.
Hey, it's always good to be with you, Kevin.
The big news, state Supreme Court by a 5-2 vote kicked Green Party presidential candidate Howie Hawkins off the ballot because of irregularities in filing petitions. Very good news for Democrat Joe Biden?
Yeah, I mean, you'd have to say. I mean, of course, the argument has always been Democrats get upset when the Green Party has put candidates on, going back in my lifetime to the 2000 election, where there was a perception that it may have cost Democrat Al Gore the election. You know, Greens always say, hey, you don't deserve a vote. You have to go out and earn a vote. But, you know, clearly... clearly, this can't be good for anybody other than Democrats, really. And Pennsylvania, you know, it's going to continue, I think, a long time dispute over Pennsylvania ballot access rules. Third-party candidates have long complained about those. I'm sure this will renew that controversy. But yeah, if you're a Democrat and worried about what is going to be a very tight election in a key battleground state, this is one less thing for you to worry about.
Right. The U.S. House race in our Pittsburgh, southwestern Pennsylvania region is drawing a lot of attention. Is incumbent Connor Lamb against Republican Sean Parnell. Parnell's drawing some national support, isn't he?
Yeah, I mean, from the very outset of this campaign, I mean, his campaign began when Donald Trump last year came to Pittsburgh for a natural gas industry conference and said, "Hey, there's a guy named Sean Parnell who's in this thing." And I was in the room at that moment, and a bunch of us reporters looked at each other and said, "Oh, Sean Parnell's running." and the president has continually returned back every time he comes to Pennsylvania. He finds a way to make mention of Sean Parnell, and that is clearly helping the Parnell campaign. He actually out-fundraised Connor Lamb in the most recent reporting quarter. That's not easy for a challenger to do. The real question, of course, is you can bring money in from outside the district, but all the votes got to come from inside the district. At least that's how it was the last time I looked. And the question will be, I think, you know, does in this district, which is made up of Beaver County and a lot of the suburban parts of Allegheny County, is being that closely tied to Donald Trump helpful to somebody? And it clearly will be in some places, but not so much in others. The big question for a lot of races up and down the ballot this year is, how do folks in college-educated suburbs that have traditionally been Republican, how are they feeling about the direction of this party? And if enough of them decide we are uncomfortable with where it's headed, that won't just be bad for Donald Trump. That'll be bad for candidates who run alongside him. And Sean Parnell has definitely done that.
Let's move over to the Pennsylvania General Assembly. Republicans still control both the House and Senate. Any local state senators who might be in danger of being upset?
Well, yeah, I don't know about upset, but there are certainly a couple of incumbents here who have to kind of look over their shoulder. We have, there are two in Allegheny County. There are two really contested elections here for state senate. One is in the 37th district, which is currently held by Pam Iovino. You may recall that Ms. Iovino won a special election for that senate seat last year, and you know, she's told me more than once. I knew from the day I won this race that there was going to be a target on my back. Republicans have seen this. This is a district. It's the airport area suburbs, the South Hills of Pittsburgh. It has mostly been held by Republicans in recent decades. They would love to get that one back. They feel like that there's territory for them there. So Ms. Iovino is aware of that for sure. The other race that I think Republicans are looking at as a potential pickup opportunity is the 45th district. That's your Monongahela Valley, currently represented by Jim Brewster, one of the more kind of conservative Democrats that we used to have a ton of around here. A guy friendly to gun owners, but also a big supporter of union causes. He is facing a Republican challenger as well, and it will be interesting to see if he's able to hold that off, because I think a lot of people look at districts like the 45th and say, you know, these are the kinds of places where Democrats have lost ground with sort of white working class voters. I've had Democrats say to me, the day Jim Brewster is no longer the senator of that district, it's going to be a while before we get that district back.
Hmm. I want to talk to you about a House district race, 33rd district. We've got a longtime incumbent here. He's the House Democratic leader, Frank Dermody. He faces a challenge from Kerry Del Rosso. What makes this race stand out for you?
Well, I mean, I'm paying a special attention to this one. This is kind of my potential upset special here. Ms. Del Rosso has been, she's working pretty hard at it. And notably, you know, it's a little too early to say too much, but notably, we have seen some union support break her way. The Boilermakers, in particular, have been a supporter. The laborers. We've seen a couple of unions. Now, most of those folks are going to stay with Mr. Dermody. He's long been an ally of labor. And it appears that the issues here that are sort of driving those endorsements have to do with kind of particular issues involving particular votes. One of which dates back to the Corbett administration several years ago. So you're kind of seeing some old grievances perhaps being settled here. You know, the other thing that kind of has me keeping an eye on this particular race is just that Mr. Dermody hasn't really faced a strong challenge in some number of years. 2 years ago, he ran against a young man who really didn't have much in the way of resources and, you know, still didn't exactly embarrass himself. I mean, Mr. Dermody won comfortably, but again, not overwhelmingly. So I think it's a race to definitely keep an eye on.
Chris Potter is the editor of WESA's Government and Accountability Team. Thanks, Chris.
Thanks, Kevin. Always good to be with you.
It's The Confluence on 90.5 WESA. I'm Kevin Gavin. For the last 20 years, the North Hills suburbs were represented in the State House by conservative champion Mike Terzai. Now that the former House Speaker has resigned, there's a chance for a major shift in a district where demographics are changing. 90.5 WESA's Lucy Perkins has this profile of the candidates.
2 years ago, Emily Skopov came within single digits of beating Mike Terzai, and she says if elected, addressing fallout from the pandemic would be a top priority. Skopov says she'd support pandemic relief like rent freezes and small business loans and tax breaks.
We want to make sure that we still put people's safety front and center, but also give them the resources they need to not only get through the health crisis, but then also return to work.
Skopov supports the intentions behind Governor Wolf's emergency declaration, but she was frustrated with the lack of transparency with its rollout. Still, she accused Republican leaders of trying to score political points by putting out, quote, sloppy and slapdash bills that they knew Wolf would veto. Skopov says the pandemic shows the need for more comprehensive health policies.
So if anything, it's really exposed how critical and how urgent it is that we address some of those issues like equity in education, access to affordable health care for everybody, because one thing the pandemic has made abundantly clear is how connected we all are.
The 28th district includes Marshall Township, McCandless, Pine, and Bradford Woods, suburban communities where residents take pride in their public schools. Skopov, whose son goes to North Allegheny School District, opposes redirecting education funding to charter schools. Skopov moved to Wexford 10 years ago after working in the film industry. Now, she runs a nonprofit called No Crayon Left Behind, which collects art supplies for schools and other organizations in need. Skopov is backed by teachers and other unions and supporters of abortion rights and gun control. But she emphasizes moderate values, like encouraging economic growth.
We know how critical those small businesses are, not only to our economy and, you know, employment, and they really are economic drivers, but also those are the things that make our individual communities feel, you know, individual and unique and different from the one next to it.
Republican candidate Rob Mercury, meanwhile, says his philosophy would be consistent with Terzai's. The former House Speaker's his largest campaign donor and has contributed more than $90,000 to his campaign.
He has always been an advocate of mine. When I go door to door, and we continue to do doors safely and with a mask, but people predominantly will say, wow, I know Mike. I respect him, and he helped me.
Mercury would continue Terzai's opposition to Governor Wolf on COVID and other issues. He wants to end Wolf's emergency declaration. And though President Trump downplayed the severity of the virus early on, Mercury says the response cannot be blamed on one person.
I think to lay blame or success at any single person's feet, you know, is a little bit too simplistic.
Mercury is a vice president at PNC Bank and lives in Pine. He grew up in the region, attended West Point, and did two tours in Iraq with the Army Intelligence Corps. Last year, he became a small business owner and runs the UPS store in Pine. His three kids go to school in the Pine Richland District. Mercury says he wouldn't take away funding from the 28th District's public schools, but also supports school choice, a proposal that often involves redirecting tax money to non-public schools. He says students should have alternatives due to religious reasons or special needs.
My focus would be on making sure that our public school districts continue to be fully funded and well-equipped, and that our teachers feel like they have what they need to do the instruction in this unique time.
Mercury's been endorsed by pro-business groups, as well as the NRA and foes of abortion rights. So far, the campaign has included familiar lines of attack. Republicans have portrayed Skopov as a California liberal, while she says Mercury only represents white, far-right Christians. But while that kind of culture war may seem familiar, analysts note that the district itself has changed. Local political consultant Ben Forstate says an influx of affluent, college-educated residents give Democrats a real chance at flipping the district. And he credits Democratic committee organizing for gains the party's made locally.
This did not exist in 2016, and it's clear the North Hills is kind of the next frontier of Democratic politics.
The election is November 3rd. I'm Lucy Perkins, 90.5 WESA News.
And for today, that is The Confluence, where the news comes together on 90.5 WESA. If you enjoy what you're hearing, there's even more to read on our website at WESA.fm, where our newsroom is rounding up everything you need to know about how the coronavirus pandemic is affecting our region and beyond. You can find more from this and past episodes of The Confluence online at WESA.fm/confluence and through your favorite podcast app. Thanks to our team, Helen Wigger, Tom Hurley, Julia Zenkovich, and Mary Lee Williams. I'm Kevin Gavin. Until next time, hope you have a good day of good news.